Welcome to episode 16 of Confessions of a Casting Director, where you will hear advice, wisdom, and true stories from inside the audition room. I'm your podcast host, Jen Rudin. So my guest today is legendary vocal coach Bob Marks. Bob Marks has been coaching privately for over 30 years. His well-known clients have included Lea Michele, Debbie Gibson, Britney Spears, and Ariana Grande, as well as cast members of almost every current Broadway musical. He was a pianist with the original Broadway production of Annie and spent two seasons as the associate conductor at the Muni Opera in St. Louis. He's given audition and performance workshops and masterclasses across the United States and Europe. Please welcome my very good friend, Bob Marks, to the podcast. Bob Marks, welcome to the podcast. I'm sorry that it took a while for us to get to do this. How are you?
I'm great. I'm very, very flattered to be asked. I've listened to them all.
Thank you. That's very sweet of you. Well, you were one of the very first people to help me figure out Confessions of a Casting Director. And so you are quoted a few times in that book as well. I think I have you talking about your vocal music binder, right? And then the initial investment, the cigar store, and how you need to have some money up front to start your store. And well, I think we talked about that.
You have to buy cigars first. If you're going to have a career auditioning, you have to learn how to audition and singing and dancing and acting and everything that goes with it.
Exactly. And I think we discussed all of that over our favorite place to have lunch, which you can tell our listeners, or we can keep it a secret. Bob Marks' secret spot.
I think the Palm in Manhattan is a very, very wonderful place for lunch. They're very reasonably priced salads, keep it healthy, keep it light, and keep it inexpensive.
So yeah. It's fun. So great. So I always say legendary vocal coach, Bob Marks. So how did you start? How did you become a vocal coach? Tell us a little bit about your origin story.
Well, I started playing the piano at about 5 years old. And somehow at 14, a musical director quit of a local production of Damn Yankees, which they called Darn Yankees, thinking that they wouldn't have to pay royalties. And so I was asked to take over. I mean, what did I know? I was 14 years old. My mother worked in a dancing school and the girl playing Lola was the dance teacher. So I went in there and somehow they hired me. I made $100 and I really enjoyed working in theater. I didn't know anything about it. And then what happened was some of the kids in the show who were all older than me had to audition for college programs and different things and they needed help. And of course that could work very inexpensively because I was living at home. So I charged $5 for an hour and I played piano for them. And I found I really enjoyed accompanying singers. My mother had been a cabaret singer and accompanying her was always a challenge because she went all over the place. So I had a lot of experience following the performer. And from there, they asked me to musical director at a sleepaway camp. They asked me to become musical director of the Fresh Meadows Community Theater. And I started musical directing. Then at 16 years old, my sister wanted voice lessons. So I took her to a lady in Manhattan that was recommended to me. And she asked me what I did. And I told her I played piano for singers and I worked with their songs and their voice and their repertoire. And she said, oh, you're a vocal coach. I said, I am, because I didn't know that that was a thing. And ever since then, I made business cards and I was a vocal coach. And then a few years later, I opened my office where I still have an office on 7th Avenue and 54th Street. And of course, the magic of FaceTime and Skype and Zoom, I have an office all over the world.
And how old were you when you started to play piano?
I was 5 years old when I started getting lessons. I started playing on a very, very little tiny toy piano. But my grandmother, who had been a violin player in Europe, could tell that I had a good ear because I could pick out tunes by ear. And she suggested I get lessons. So thank goodness, I have a job.
So did you ever go to college or did you skip college because you were so busy working?
I was working when I went to Queens College originally, right out of high school. And I was a music major because that was predestined. And back then, there was only classical music, which didn't interest me, and jazz music, which didn't interest me. There was no theater, there was no pop, there was no nothing else. So I kind of gravitated towards the drama department. And luckily, and the name will sound familiar to you from your friend Danny, Ed Greenberg, who was a professor at Queens College, got me involved as associate conductor of the Muni Opera in St. Louis. And I spent two summers there. I got to conduct, I got to play the piano for rehearsals, I got to play auditions, and I got a lot of valuable experience doing that. And then after that, I became one of the pianists for the Broadway show, Annie.
So finished Queens College or didn't finish? It's okay if you didn't. You were too busy.
No, but that's what happened was after about a year and a half, I left Queens College because I just was not doing well. I was too busy to go to classes. And several years later, after I got married and found out that there was such a thing called speech therapy, because my wife is a speech therapist, I went back to college at Montclair State and got a degree in speech and voice pathology.
Oh, wow. That's great. I didn't know that. I didn't know that it happened later on.
Yeah, it was. I was one of the oldest. But what happened was I was a musical director for the Speech and Hearing Association shows. And I was asking a lot of questions because I saw all the displays about the voice and the breathing and the vocal cords. And I wanted to know more about that. And somebody suggested, maybe you should go back to college. I said, I'm kind of old. I'm 25. You know, to me, that was old. You know, it was older than I'd ever been. And I went, took a class over the summer to see if I could succeed. And I found it very interesting to learn something I knew nothing about, because science was never one of my strong points. But I learned that if you buckle down, show up to class, do your homework and study, you might do well.
So you mentioned Annie, and we're going to spend a little time there because obviously that was, you know, my dream and so many girls' dreams in the 80s to audition for it. So you started out as a rehearsal pianist.
I did everything. What happened was the music chairman at John Brown High School was a guy named Irving Gross. His son, Arnie, got a job playing the piano for Annie. He was one of the pianists. Then he got a movie called All That Jazz, a Bob Fosse story. And he needed to take time off. So fortunately, he called me and I took over for him. So sometimes I played auditions, sometimes I taught the national companies, sometimes I played performances. It was wide and varied, and they kept pianists very busy back then.
And how many years were you with the show? And this was a freelance job, so you were also doing your coaching as well?
Yes, and I realized I couldn't do both very easily, because if they called me at 11 o'clock on a Wednesday and said I have to play the matinee, I'm like, why didn't you think of that yesterday? Because I had clients scheduled. So I spent 3 years there, the first few Annies, and mostly I worked with the understudies. So when Andrew McArdle was Annie, I was working more with Sarah Jessica Parker and Shelley Bruce. When Shelley Bruce was Annie, I was working with Sarah. So it just kind of was like that.
That's amazing. Then,
I was one of the few vocal coaches that worked with kids.
Right. And what's the most exciting story that happened backstage or in a rehearsal room? I mean, I feel like it's such a legendary show. And obviously when you look back at some of the people who floated in and out of that cast, like Sarah Jessica Parker, what can you share? Like, what was a really exciting moment or the moment when you thought, wow, I think this one's going to be a star and that one may not continue in the business? Did you have a sense of who was who back then?
Not really, because, you know, when you're living in the moment, you're not looking into the future.
You're thinking like a casting director.
I mean, when Britney Spears came to me, she came to me because she was auditioning for Les Mis. It was nothing to do with pop, nothing to do with fame. It was just, you know, a little girl from Kenwood, Louisiana. So when I was doing Annie, nothing really crazy happened except the first performance I played. I had never played in a Broadway pit before. And I was as nervous could be. Because not only did I have to play a piano, a real piano, not electric, but I also had an electric keyboard to make that harpsichord sound, like the beginning of Hard Knock Life. And I had a celeste on top of the piano. So I had to play the celeste and the piano sometimes at the same time. And I was just nervous about something going wrong, the electric piano getting unplugged, the volume being down. I didn't know what could go wrong.
How did it go? Did it go okay?
It went okay. It actually went okay. I was very, very surprised. Once I did it, it was like, it was like the first time at the Muni, the very first show I conducted was Leonard Bernstein's On the Town. And I could not have been more nervous. I'd never conducted before. And but when you're 21 years old, they said, you conduct? You go, yes, of course I conduct. You know, now we're a little more careful.
Yeah.
I'm not as quick to say yes. I'm more apt to say, no, maybe not me.
Right. But when we're young, we're, you know, fearless. What, how many times do you think you've seen Annie or played that song?
Oh my God. it must be at least in the hundreds. I mean, I not only saw it often in New York because I had to take notes for the cast, but I've done it all over in dinner theaters and worked with the tour companies. And every time a student gets a job in Annie, I'm invited. One of my proudest moments was sitting at the Muni Opera 40 years after I had worked there, sitting next to Tara Kennedy, who was my first child client because her parents wanted to audition for Annie. And her daughter, my student Peyton Ella, was on stage at the Muni playing the role of Annie.
Yeah.
And that was amazing. And that happened at Paper Mill also.
That's right.
Tara had done it at Paper Mill, and Ella Peyton was playing it at Paper Mill.
So do you think young actors should take voice lessons? I feel like some people say yes, some people say no. What is your philosophy on young actors getting their voices in order?
Well, what I always told people was if they're going to sing, they may as well do it in a healthy, correct way. I mean, there's a school of thought that, you know, why should they belt that high? But if they're going to belt that high, it would be nice to work on their breathing and their relaxation and their vowels and everything that goes along with it. So yes, I think voice lessons are important. Just like, I mean, you can ride your bicycle, but you're not going to do it in the circus unless you've had training.
And how old do you start, or how young should somebody, what's the youngest you think somebody should start?
I usually say 7 years old, because they kind of need to read a little bit. They need to be able to be independent of their parents. They need to understand music and words and be able to sit with somebody for 45 minutes or an hour.
Sure, without a parent in the room.
I've had people at five.
And because I also think that, you know, one of the, you know, I do private coaching, you do private coaching, you know, I don't have parents around unless it's a Zoom and they're 7 years old and they're going to self-tape afterwards. So you don't have any parents in the room for the young ones, do you? They have to be able to be in the room alone. Yeah.
Generally, it works out much, much, much better that way.
Yeah.
Because at the audition, they're going to be in the room alone too. They have to know the organization of their binders, their music, what key they're in, what the introduction is, what to say to the pianist. And they can't do it if they keep looking at their mom.
That's right.
Their mom's not going to be there.
That's so true. That's so true. So what is your best audition advice for somebody? Like somebody texts you or calls you or tries to book an appointment and they're like, oh my God, Bob, I have an audition tomorrow at 2 and we have to learn the music. What do you do? How do you help an actor who's going, you know, to the dark place because they're so overwhelmed? How do you work with them so that they can walk into that audition room, as I like to say, with their lives in order and just give a great audition and then get on with their day? What do you do first? Take me through what a private lesson would be like.
Well, it depends. You said that they get an audition the day before and they have to learn a particular song. So then we have to work on the notes and the words first and foremost, just making sure that they're in the right place, that they're in the right key, that they know what the melody is. And we have to take it step by step, one foot in front of the other. Teaching more online now, I've learned it's different in a way when you're doing it through Skype or Zoom or FaceTime, because I have to send tracks. I can't play the piano for them. So I have to send them a track slowed down of the melody being plunked out. Then I have to send them a track with the melody and the accompaniment, then just the accompaniment. And if their audition is the next day, it can be kind of stressful. But when they walk in there, they just have to be the kind of person that those people want to work with. They have to look like they're happy to be there. They have to look them in the eye when they say hello. And they have to just do their best and know that you always have to expect what you don't expect. Right. Because you never know. People say, well, what should I expect when I go on the road? I said, don't know. What do you expect when you go on a first date? Don't know. You know, it just depends on the situation, on the people, on the piece. Sometimes they have all the time in the world. And sometimes they know when you walk in the door that you're not right. And now, unfortunately, with the technology, they used to just say, come in and sing an up-tempo or a ballad or a head voice or a belt song. Now they send you music. They send pages and pages of music to learn before they've ever seen you.
I know.
And a lot of times it's the look anyway. So we used to have something in the old days called EPIs, Equity Principle Interviews. We didn't even hear you sing. We didn't see you dance. You walked in, you sat down, we looked at your resume, said, oh, you tap dance. All right, for the call, for the audition, why don't you prepare an up-tempo, kind of a soft shoe song? And we could tell them kind of where we saw them and then call them back or not. But now you come in, it's like a callback and they haven't even seen you yet.
Exactly.
And of course, layers, the assistant to the casting director, the assistant director, the dance captain, choreographer, the director, they put you through hoops.
I always say it's easier to book a TV series, a role in a TV show, than it is to get even to be replacement on Broadway. And when I worked at Disney Broadway, it was like to just, you know, to be in Mary Poppins, to join the cast, you had to go through, you know, so many auditions, lengthy auditions, the dance audition, this is the partnering with the dance choreography and all of that stuff. And then did you fit the costume? So what was it like for the Annie auditions? What did they have to prepare back then? We're talking for our listeners, anybody that's younger, we're talking 1976, 1977 to 1983, right? For Broadway. And then of course it went on and on and on. But what did they have to sing? A portion of Tomorrow or something?
Usually it was just Tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times they would split up Tomorrow into four parts. The first, the song come out Tomorrow, the next one, Just Thinking About Tomorrow, then When I'm Stuck with a Day That's Growing Lonely, and then Tomorrow. So whatever part you happen to get, if you were fourth online, you got the end, you got the big ending. People like to get the third or the fourth part. I remember long lines around the block on 52nd Street, you know, little girls with their moms, sometimes in full costume, which is generally a mistake.
So you're talking about the open call. So then, because I used to do the open calls for Little Mermaid and we would listen to Part of Your World and I would point, right? I had a group of six women, young women, and then we would see if you could sustain that those high notes and then we would make a cut from there. So was it really just like a group of girls on stage and then making a cut or keeping a couple girls for callbacks?
No, they just got called back for another day. But back then they didn't have all the layers. Usually Martin Charnin, the director, was right there at the open call. So now it's just very, very different. But now there's so many more kids in the business.
That's
when I started,
right.
Children predominantly didn't have voice teachers or vocal coaches. The vocal coaches were old lady, former opera singers. And they wouldn't work with a child that was prepubescent. They were very careful. They wouldn't let them belt. And you know, your voice teacher didn't let you belt.
Right. Right. Well, I wasn't very talented in the singing, but maybe if I'd gone to see you. Let's shift a little bit away from Annie and talk about something different. So something different. I used to go to birthday parties in the 80s and the kids would have it at this ice cream place or dessert place. And then there would be kids I knew from auditions performing songs. So how did that start? And what a great, you know, what a great venue for kids to perform in way back then.
Well, I got a call to take over as host and musical director, and I had never hosted a show before. I had a microphone, and suddenly I had to say, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Youngstars. And it took some getting used to, but I enjoyed every minute of it. And I met people, I mean, people you know, Kerry Butler was one of our kids, Lara Burke, who did the movie of Annie, Sarah Jessica Parker was part of it, Sasha Charnin, Martin Charnin's daughter, Debbie Gibson.
And did people have to audition to do that?
Oh, yes, they did. Yes, they did, over and over again sometimes.
So I guess Young Stars was the name of the group, but Something Different was the name of the restaurant, right? Am I getting that correct? Okay.
What happened was something different than the dessert nightclub.
Right.
Singing waiters and waitresses. And some of them grew up to be pretty famous. But then they decided to put on a show with young performers and they called it Beginnings. And then that ultimately moved to the comic strip, which was a block or two away. And the woman's name who owned Something Different was named Patricia Young. So it was Young Stars, like her stars, but they were young.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. And so what was did the kids get paid for that? Because they were like performing at birthday parties and stuff, right? Did they get some ice cream or something?
Ice cream or a big cookie. But they loved it. They loved it. And again, this is before internet and texting and cell phones and email. So you called them on the phone. They couldn't quite text each other and go, you're performing this, or you're sitting here. Nowadays, it's an open book. But back then, it was a very small, close community, and Pat Young kind of made the decision who she liked, who she didn't like, whether they would sing one song or two songs. And I arranged the show every day. We went into the basement and ran through the opening number, a cappella, and then went on. We did, I think, 4 or 5 shows a weekend.
Right, I was going to say it was birthday. I feel like it was birthday parties. And so I guess you did, a lot of them were birthday parties, and the kids would, you know, hang out and then sing, and then we would eat cake or something. But yeah, I remember that so vividly. It was really fun. And everybody wore t-shirts. That's what I remember too, matching t-shirts.
Sometimes sweatshirts.
Right, okay. So what,
videos.
We've talked a lot about technology and how it sort of changed vocal, your teaching, but I still think that the in-person is really what you opt for the most with your clients, right?
It's funny when I first got Skype, I said, oh my God, I can do Skype, you know, and then I realized the limitations of it. And of course the people that wanted the Skype lesson lived in like New Jersey. Skype is if you live in Indiana, you know, if you can't really get into Manhattan. But so then I kind of discouraged the online lessons. But then I saw other voice teachers were doing it, and people seemed happy. So I said, I better do it too. So I started again. Then again, I said, let's discourage this. But then when we have a pandemic and I haven't been in my office for 3 or 4 weeks, I'm so grateful to be able to teach people from all over the country from my dining room table.
So you're getting them the tracks in advance, and then you join, they join the Zoom and you sing and go over stuff that way.
Well, it's I usually don't send the tracks in advance because I'm not always sure what I want to do, but with the speed of texting, as long as they have a device like an iPhone to accept a sound file,
wow,
and I'm on with them with an iPad or laptop, then they can receive it right away and play it.
So you're doing it that way.
Okay. Yeah, I usually send a few warm-up tracks, and we do the warm-ups. And after 2 or 3 times, they're very comfortable with it. They know just where the track is located. And I luckily have technology here where I can, let's say, take a track and slow it down digitally. So I don't have to replay it here.
Okay.
So the limit is I can't simultaneously play while you sit.
Yeah. So you're watching their performance and then giving some feedback in terms of what they're doing, how they're singing it, different adjustments to do. Well, hopefully we'll all be back in real life with each other soon. What do you wish you could tell your younger self, knowing what you know now? I mean, you've worked with thousands and thousands of young actors and grown-ups, and how many clients do you think over the years?
Well, I've kept track since 1980 of how many lessons I do each week, because I was trying to find a pattern, because I wanted to take my kids on vacation. So I said, let's find a week where it's less lessons. But it's all dependent on what auditions are happening and the weather and everything else, not under my control. I believe it's around 94,000 lessons at this point. Don't know exactly how many students, but that's a lot of lessons.
Yeah, that's a lot of lessons. And what advice would you give yourself, your younger self, knowing, again, you run your own business, you own your own business. I'm a small business owner as well. What do you wish you'd known back when you first opened up your office?
Well, I probably would have taken more time to become a better pianist. I would have worked more on classical music, worked more on technique. Because again, this is when I was playing Candor and Ebb, Cole Porter, Rodgers and Hammerstein. It wasn't that complicated. This is before Adam Gettle and Jason Robert Brown and Stephen Sondheim.
Andrew Lippa.
Yeah, it's a little more complicated now. And I probably should have been a little bit more conscientious of technique, of my own technique. I'm very glad that my younger self went back to college for speech therapy, because anatomy, physiology, phonetics, acoustics all play a part. And for credibility, for people to refer people to me, they want to know that they're going to stay vocally healthy. And I think that's an important thing. So I'm glad I did that. I thought it would be not as challenging at this point, but it's still, every day is another challenge. Every day is like day one. And it's not like you build up seniority. You just keep going, and people haven't heard of you. You have to start all over again and say, what do you do? What do you do? And you know, that's okay. I've got an answer.
And what, Bob, you know, 8 performances a week, if you're singing 8 shows a week, what is your advice for actors to get through that and be able to still go home and talk to their spouse? And, you know, I mean, you can't be on vocal rest all the time if you're in a Broadway show 8 times a week. So what's your best advice to sustain that endurance that is needed?
Well, first of all, get enough sleep, get enough moisture. And eventually muscle memory will take over. But I would say minimize the non-essential talking. You know, you can talk quietly to your spouse. Don't talk to anybody you're too far to touch. You know, keep in very close proximity. And rest your voice as much as you can.
And you hear all these things like eat an apple, don't have dairy. What's real, what's not real in terms of food?
There is a school of thought that dairy is bad, because they see if they drink a glass of milk, they see the milk on the side of the glass and they figure that's sitting on their vocal cords. I think you have to see what your body, how your body reacts to different things. I mean, I know actors that have yogurt and milk before they sing and they have no problem. And then I have people that that have reflux from water. So you have to see what your body will do. See an ear, nose, and throat doctor. That's important. You need a baseline assessment of how your vocal cords are, whether everything is healthy. People sometimes think that their general doctor can see their vocal cords, but they can't. They need something called a laryngoscopy. So they stick a little camera up your nose or into your throat, and the ear, nose, and throat doctor can actually see your vocal cords. And you might get a video of it, you might get still pictures of it, and they can determine whether everything is healthy, because you want those cords to come together, called approximate, evenly. You don't want to develop nodes or nodules or anything like that.
Boy, wow. And have you share some of your sort of greatest moments? I mean, obviously, Stephanie Mason in The Yiddish Fiddler, you know, some of the students that you've loved and worked with for so long, when they finally get that break and you get to see them. Because I know, Bob, you're so wonderful at attending everybody's shows and posting pictures and supporting your clients. So can you share a couple of just beautiful stories with our listeners of those moments where you knew they were perfect and wonderful? It was just about finding the right time. Like, I feel like our friend Stephanie, you know, we loved her for so many years, and she did so many different productions of Fiddler all around the country. And then this Yiddish Fiddler was just, that's when it all, you know, sort of aligned for her. So share a few of those moments. You talked about Tara and Peyton. Who else?
Well, Stephanie came to me right out of high school from Columbus, Ohio. Luckily, my friend and colleague, Nancy Carson, an agent, recommended her to me, for which I'm eternally grateful. And I worked with her on everything, on her belt and her soprano and her repertoire and her voice. And she was a real legit soprano. She played Maria in West Side Story several times. She got her equity card at Houston Theater Under the Stars, which is a pretty good place to get your equity card, with another former client, Max von Essen. So he was playing Tony and she was Maria. And it was a very beautiful production. We flew down to see it. And then she played it about in 2 or 3 or 4 other theaters. She was always Maria, because she could dance, she could act, she could sing, and she was a bit ethnic. Not DNA-wise, because she's Italian-American, but ethnic enough back then. And then as we worked together, she was developing her belt voice, and then she did Million Dollar Quartet, which is a big belt role. And she was in the National Company, she was in Vegas Company, and she did very, very well there. And then suddenly, Fiddler. And originally, I remember Steph said to me, do you think I can play Fanny Bryce? And I'm thinking, this Jewish kind of funny looking Barbra Streisand type, I doubt it. But she nailed Funny Girl. And Wen took that and made Fiddler her baby. She played all the daughters. She could do Zeitl and Huddle and Chava. And of course, the big feather in her cap was doing it on Broadway with Danny Burstein. And then when she got the Yiddish Fiddler, this is a girl who doesn't speak Yiddish, doesn't speak Hebrew, was not raised Jewish. And she was a beautiful Huddle in Yiddish, which is recorded. You can find it on iTunes. And she is marrying her Perchik.
I know, it's the sweetest.
Also not Jewish. He's from Virginia. And they're getting married next year. I'm just so proud and happy for all her success. And I know she's got a long way. She's going to be a great Mama Rose one day. She's going to do every age group. She's going to do great.
Yeah, no, it's a great story.
I worked with Natalie Portman. Before she was Portman, she was Natalie Hirschlag. And then she did Anne Frank on Broadway. And then my other client, Natalie Paulding, took over for her. But Natalie Paulding didn't know any of the Hebrew or the prayers or the Hanukkah songs, so I had to coach her quickly on how to do Jewish things. Like I said, Britney Spears was delightful, and I thought that her forte would be jazz because she had such a kind of smoky voice, and I thought jazz is going to be what she does. I prepared her for her Star Search audition, which is the precursor to American Idol, and she did very well there. Of course, I was thrilled about Debbie Gibson. She came to me for a long time, and then one day her mother said, Deborah's been writing music. Could you help her write it down on paper? Sure. And she made 4 or 5 CDs and songbooks of all songs she wrote and performed, and she's still writing and performing, doing well. Ariana Grande. I met her at her brother Frankie Grande's opening night party for Mamma Mia, and I met his little sister there. And she wanted to take lessons, so she did, and look at her now.
Yeah, so amazing, amazing. Where can people find you, Bob? How can they book a session with you? What do you offer in terms of times, and how do we do it? How do you book a coaching session?
Well, the first sessions, I like to, at some point, talk to you on the phone, old school. But you can email me, bob@bobmarks.com. That's bobmarks.com. You can find me on Instagram, I'm Bob Marks. On Twitter, I'm Bob Marks. On Facebook, I'm Bob Marks. On LinkedIn, I'm Bob Marks. I tried to reserve Bob Marks. What happened was I couldn't get bobmarks@aol.com many years ago. So at that point, I said, I have to reserve my name. So you can find me everywhere. I'm very easy to find. I'm happy to work with people for the first time, experienced people, beginners. And you can contact me any number of ways. I'm also working on a book with a woman named Elizabeth Gerby, who's a theater historian, director, writer, singer, actress, and a college professor. And we're writing a book called 88 Keys to Successful Singing Performances. And we're putting the finishing touches on it, getting it proofread, working on publishing possibilities, and hopefully that will be out by next year.
Yeah, and we'll have you back on the show when that's out so we can do a launch, a soft one when it's ready to go out. Bob, it's so inspiring to hear the stories and the persistence and hard work that that you've seen your clients do in order to get what they want, right? Which is to perform and to be healthy performing, to sing those 8 shows a week. What's your best advice for somebody who wants to be on Broadway? I mean, so many people have dreams and we want to make people's dreams come true in the casting world, but we also need to make sure that you're qualified to do the show. So what's your best advice for actors, for musical theater performers?
Well, lessons are a never-ending part of your life. You know, just like a diet. You can't be on a diet and then say, okay, I'm done now. You're never done. You're never done with voice lessons. You're never done with dance lessons. You're never done with acting coaching. There's always going to be something to work on. And now with self-tapes, you have to have people that are technologically proficient as well as dramatically proficient. But the best advice I can give you is not to give up, because that's the only way you can fail. I remember years ago, a teenager said to me, I just know my family is waiting for me to fail at this, you know, theater. And I thought about it. I go, how will they know? Well, like, when do you fail? Well, in my opinion, you fail when you give up. Because if you don't give up, sometimes you may only get the Tony Award at 40. And sometimes you can get a Tony Award when you're very young and never work again. There's no milestone. There's no point where you go, okay, I'm done. Because you're always auditioning. You're always auditioning. Hopefully you'll get to a point where you are a Broadway name like a Sutton Foster, a Patti LuPone, or a Kelly O'Hara, where you just are offered roles. But that doesn't happen often. And there's a lot of luck and look and work at it. But work is the main thing.
Yeah, no, I think that's so true. It doesn't happen overnight. And I always say, even if you're an Instagram, you know, influencer phenomenon, then that's not necessarily a sign of talent. That's, you know, something else entirely. But to really be, as a friend of mine said, you know, chipping away at the boulder and chipping away at the boulder, especially in this business where there's no trajectory, right? It's not going to soccer where you're guaranteed that you're going to play for a season. You every audition is that opportunity. But there's no guarantee you're going to get it.
Unless you're injured and you don't play that season.
Right.
And I tell you, one thing that sports has in its favor is it's scored. You know whether you won or lost. You know why you won or lost. And you know that there is a winner and somebody who didn't win. Broadway, you can do the best job in the world. You can walk in there, be perfect, get every note right, get every word right, and still you're too short. You're too old. You're too young. You don't know why you don't get it. So you just have to keep going. I tell kids sometimes, it would be like if you took a spelling test and spelled every word right, and your teacher gave you a zero. And you said, excuse me, why did I get a zero? I spelled every word right. She says, I don't like the color of your hair. So Broadway and show business is an animal of its own.
That is such a great, I love that, Bob. I love that there's a winner and a loser in sports. They keep score. And in this situation, there is no rhyme or reason, right? We just don't know. And I think if people can try to remember that, it might take some of the disappointment out of those auditions. I mean, I just would lie awake at night, you know, praying and hoping that I would get the part when I was young. And that was just the most unhealthy, you know, mental place to be, because I just had all this yearning, you know, and if I didn't get it, I took it so personally. But when you put it like that, it really helps people. And I think for parents too, who are listening to this, to really understand that your job is to get prepared for the audition, go see Bob, get the lesson, be prepared, know what you're going to do when you walk into that audition room, and then see what happens. Right. And I love that you spelled everything correctly, and the teacher says, I don't like your hair color. That is.
See, there are jobs. I mean, if you want some guarantees in life, do well in high school, get into a good college, go to law school, pass the bar, and you will get a job of some kind. But you can go to the best university for musical theater. You can get your master's in musical theater and never get a job. It's just, there's no measurable winner or loser, and you don't know why. That's the whole thing. Luckily, if you can be versatile as much as possible, you leave yourself open to as many things as possible. If you can't get the part of Huddle, maybe you'll get Seidel. If you can't get Seidel, maybe you'll get Chava. You don't know. It's kind of one of those things. So hopefully there's always tomorrow.
Yes, yes. On that note, my goodness. Well, thank you so much, Bob, for sharing so much wisdom and hope, especially at this time where we're all, you know, in our houses and hoping for better numbers, the numbers to go down with this pandemic. And again, for everybody who's listening, it's bobmarks.com, and it's Bob Marks on Twitter and Instagram and bob@bobmarks.com. So thank you, Bob, for sharing that. And, thank you for being a guest. It was very, I'm going to be thinking about that for a while, about the scoring and the soccer. Cause I always think about soccer games, right? I always tell parents, it's not like when you sign up for soccer, but now there's this additional thing that you mentioned, which is that, you know, winners and losers and keeping score.
You probably have a scoring system of some kind.
Yeah, I mean, we've done that in the past for musicals. You score their dance and all of that. I think for me, you know, I don't work so much in musicals anymore. It's more, you know, certainly with young actors, they're making a good first impression. I promise I'll see them again for another part. There's always going to be another chance. It's not quite as nice and sweet for adult actors because, you know, but kids, they grow, they change. Today's 7-year-old is suddenly a smart 10-year-old tomorrow, right? And so I'll see them again for that. Well, thank you, Bob. And this was really great. For more episodes of Confessions of a Casting Director, go to jenrudincasting.com/podcast or wherever you get your podcast fix. And please subscribe, rate, and review, and tell your friends about our show. We've got a bunch of fun online classes for young actors in voiceover and animation, TV acting analysis, and monologues at reduced prices during the pandemic. So you can check them out and sign up at jenrudincasting.com/classes-coaching. And if you love this show as much as I love doing it, please consider supporting us with a contribution to keep our show going. You can contribute at jenrudincasting.com/podcast and support us through Patreon or PayPal. Thanks for listening.